This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be. And we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I was just kidding. The man you see in the
place to be. Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big talk of the walk, Knights of Columbus backpack,
when does it end, JR?
Bring the carriage back to the fucking thing, then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
Making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in L.A. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Could be worse than Josh Richard. Handsome young stranger lay dead on the floor.
Just for a moment I stood there in silence, shocked by the foul evil deed I had done.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And of course, back inside the Vintage Vault after taking a week off for some Halloween festivities a week ago. And of course, joining me as always is the Equinemia St. Brown to my Marquez Valdez Scantling, and that is Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 504 of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold standard. JR, I felt a little nostalgic chatting with you this weekend because you were talking with us in the chat about doing some cleaning in the house, and you're doing some work down in the basement and having to move tapes and various forms of media, DVDs and such. Kind of got me a little nostalgic from the old days and
that wispiness with my wife, because she feels like I'm a fucking hoarder, piece of shit that needs to get rid of all this stuff. I literally sent her out to buy like 3 huge bins from Walmart, and they are all full already. So yeah, I'm looking at it now. You'll see when you come in a couple weeks. I just got everything like stacked up in here at the moment. But yes, we're finishing our basement, so we're purging a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, I got rid of a lot of stuff. But I'm not ready to get rid of that crap. I told her maybe someday, but right now I still have to go through things and whatever. But yeah, it is. It's been a little tough. I mean, like, not only just the wrestling tapes, but I have other just stuff from like as a kid, like all my video games and books and magazines. Like, I just have all that stuff packed away. And a lot of it I don't want to get rid of because I want to give to my kids. And, you know, I've been giving my son some of my wrestling figures. So, like, there's a lot of stuff I do want to keep. It's just finding room for it. So,
right.
We'll get there.
No, absolutely.
All right. Joining us tonight is a man who, it's been a while since he was with us on a Vintage Vault. He was here doing a shit job of keeping score on episode 500, but he saw it through, so we'll give him credit there. He is the voice of Greetings from Allentown. You hear moonlighting on many other podcasts as well. And we'll give a little rub to the Adams Division with Steve Bennett, of course. That'll be coming out with a special for Survivor Series, I'm told. So be on the lookout for that. And that is the one and only Peter Winston. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing good, and you should never have to apologize for getting your basement finished, because I'm sitting in one right now, and I didn't finish it myself, but it's one of the great pleasures is being able to sit down here and watch sports in perfect solitude, even though something's wrong with the lights down here, and they're kind of flickering, but we got an electrician coming by soon, so we'll get that fixed. Yeah.
Well, I have a partially finished. Like, I have room to come down, but we're going to finish the rest of it. And I'm actually a little concerned because he's supposed to start in early December, and I'm starting to realize, like, I record all my shows down here. So, like, I don't know where I'm going to go. especially with our annual Christmas plays coming up. Obviously, it has a lot of voices and a lot of, like, I can't just sit in my living room and do it while the kids are sleeping. So I don't know if I'm going to be in the middle of, like, a ripped apart basement recording a Christmas show in a few weeks, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Yeah. I am a little disappointed that neither of you gave me any credit for pronouncing those two Packers wide receivers' names flawlessly on the first try.
I figured you practiced. Equanimeous St. Brown. Mm-hmm. What was the other guy? I don't even know who the other guy is. I know who Equanimeous St. Brown is.
Marquez Valdez-Scantling. You should get to know him. I think he'll be the next man up as soon as the one dies off in Green Bay like they always do. But
yes.
King is dead. Long live the king. That's the receiver situation in Green Bay.
That's true. All right. Well, this evening, of course, with Peter here, we are going national tonight, JR. It is Saturday night's main event. And the date, October 29th, 1988, from the arena in old Baltimore, Maryland, the old backyard for good old Vince and the gang. This was taped the previous Tuesday. So this was taped, JR, the day after the house show that you, me, and Mr. D'Amato did.
So not too moldy, actually. I feel like these are usually at least a week or two old, but this one's pretty tight.
Nope, 4 days, and that's why it's funny that you and I are going to be discussing literally the same matches.
That's a lot.
I know, very different though. National matches are very different. So this was taped on Tuesday, the 25th, and is airing this evening. Of course, your announcer is always Vincent Kennedy McMahon and The Body. I feel like we haven't heard Jesse in like years. When was the last time Jesse was at the Garden? It's been at least, a year and a half, probably?
Probably 86, early 86, it would have to be. Probably 85, actually.
Yeah, I don't think we've heard from him since Science Moon Event, because he didn't do SummerSlam. He didn't do WrestleFest.
No, he didn't do all the WrestleFests. He did that one. He did the one dub match that they did.
So I guess we technically heard him there, I guess.
We technically heard him, but it wasn't live. He wasn't part of the whole show. He did the one dub match that was for primetime. So, but he's back tonight. Any notes, JR, before we hit in?
Just one. Since our last show earlier this week, the 1029 Superstars, which aired earlier this day, Hercules was a guest at Brother Love on the Brother Love show. He said, WWF World Champion Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth came out, Savage saying he wanted to shake Hercules' hand, and did so, cementing Herc's official babyface turn, of course, coming off all the stuff we discussed last episode, around the slavery and him being sold to DiBiase and all that. So they're really pushing Herc as a face, as a superpower, and really kind of de facto third member of the Mega Powers, right? I mean, that's kind of how they're presenting him. Peter, what did you think of this whole angle? I don't think we're really going to cover it tonight, so if you want to get your thoughts in.
The whole thing with seances and that business, I absolutely loved it. And it made sense that he was on the Survivor Series team coming up. So,
yes.
From that perspective.
What did you think of the slavery stuff?
The slavery thing I thought was a little weird, since DiBiase clearly hadn't looked at the 13th Amendment or probably any of the other ones for that matter.
The previous 12.
Yes.
He's got a gun, I'm guessing, so he probably...
DiBiase's constitution stops at, like, 1857.
Yes. So, before you continue, JR, I just realized, of course, this was a tape show, so there were house shows on this evening. The live guys were around. There were three shows, actually. Looks like... let me check and see. I don't know if this is... Oh, it looks like it was... The roster was broken up into three groups. We have one show at the Coliseum down in Richmond. All it says, Mr. Graham Cawthon has on the history of WWE.com included the Red Rooster, the Rockers, the Powers of Pain, Jim Duggan, and the aforementioned Colonel Ted DiBiase from the Union Army or whatever.
You had me at Red Rooster.
Yeah. These next two shows, we have a full card. The Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, home of the Running Rebels, 3,000 for this show. All right, Peter, we'll decide what you think, which show you would have paid for here. All right, Scott Casey defeated Jose Estrada.
I think I'll say Scott Keith for a second.
Scott Keith defeated Jose.
And then he ranted about the match and said it sucked.
Yes. The Blue Blazer pinned Barry Horowitz. Brutus Beefcake defeated Ron Bass. After the bout, Bass attacked Beefcake with his spurs until the Blue Blazer and Scott Casey made the save. Ooh, hot Scott Casey. No wonder.
Big night.
Women's champion Sensational Sherry pinned Rock and Robin. JR, before we continue this, another note. We have a title change to discuss because earlier in the month in Paris, France,
Paris.
Rock and Robin became our new women's champion. Oui, oui.
Yeah.
So the title win in Paris earlier in the month had yet to be recognized here. Okay. Obviously, it hadn't made syndication yet. So the Rougeaus defeated the Hart Foundation. Tito Santana defeated Akeem via countout. Bad News Brown pinned Coco Beware. Mr. Perfect pinned Jim Brunzel. And in the main event, your Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, defeated the Honky Tonk Man via countout at 3:15. All right, there's one card, Peter. Card number two was at the Civic Center Arena in Lakeland, Florida. NWA/WCW stomping ground there. Your card, I don't have results. We just have the matches. B. Brian Blair versus Iron Mike Sharp. Paul Roma versus Danny Davis. Kent Patera against the Big Boss Man. The Junkyard Dog against King Haku. Don Morocco taking on Greg Valentine. Demolition took on the British Bulldogs for the tag titles. Jake Roberts against Rick Rude. And the main event, your world heavyweight champion, the Macho Man Randy Savage, took on Andre the Giant. So if you had the money, Peter, and you got to choose, would you head out to Sin City or the Panhandle?
Wait, did you say that Boss Man was on both shows?
Boss Man was not in Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Akeem was in Vegas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that must have been where I got confused.
Yeah.
Well, I've been to Lakeland, Florida, and I lived in Las Vegas for about 8 months. And let's see, Las Vegas, Lakeland, Florida. I'm not even considering the card. I'm going to choose Vegas because if the show stinks, I can leave halfway through and go gamble downtown. Yeah.
I'm trying to think who the I don't know which minor league, which team has a which team spring training facility is in Lakeland. Somebody.
Detroit's been in Lakeland, or they were in Lakeland for a long time. I don't know.
Well,
if they
it's
still
October,
are.
So nobody there now. So
yeah,
I think I'd go to Vegas too just to see the great Scott Casey make not one but two in ring appearances.
I think Geronimo Allison was on that Lakeland show.
All right. So there you go. Just want to let everyone know that there were live house show cards on this Saturday evening while we were on NBC.
Be our guest. Put our service to the test.
Ah, Mademoiselle. Rockin' Robin, women's champion. Welcome to Cape Paddy. You picture that fucking twit winning that title. She's awful. Going to remain being awful despite that for the championship.
Sounds like El Giante became a maitre d'. Hey, why don't you come and sit down, you fucking skinny bitch? Anyway, any more notes, JR?
No, thankfully, that's about it.
Yeah. All right. Go to Jesse and the Vin Man.
Vin Mass. Okay. Yeah, let's do that. We're back on NBC. Long layoff set in the course of Survivor Series. You open with promos from Jake Roberts and Cheryl Roberts. Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan, Slick and the Big Boss Man, the Hart Foundation, Demolition, Mr. Fuji, Jimmy Hart, and Hulk Hogan. After our opening animation, Vince and Jesse welcome us in, and Jesse mocks Vince's buddy Dan Quayle as we're on the eve of the election, and they run down the card. So, what's going on here? election Eve. Pretty fitting. Time makes sense. Yep. Of course, we were on election eve here tonight as well. So
I like Jesse wearing like the detective hat, so I immediately called him Ace.
With that awful ponytail. Oh my god!
So you're saying he's Ace Ventura? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
he looked like a mob guy. I don't know. It was very strange.
Yeah. I heard he's going to find a dolphin after the show.
Dan Marino.
All right, we got a few to recap as Jake Roberts and Rick Rude. Jesse says Cheryl's the Robin Givens of the WWF and says Jake looks like a drunken Marine when he made the save for his wife. So strong start from Jesse right out of the gate.
Not the last drunken Marine to make an impact on the WWF, I can assure you.
No, definitely not. Not the last time Jake will be referred to as a drunk on WWF TV as well. Robin Givens, Jesse, like, he loves just anything he can say that's like misogynistic or racist, like anything he can get in. He just works. He can barely like contain himself to say it. But here we are. Gene's with Rude and Bobby, and Gene asks why he insists on wearing the Cheryl Roberts tights. Rude says he's never embarrassed of his body and that Jake and Damien could never beat him in a three-legged race, which I thought was a great line. Bobby references the towel-headed swamis and does a bit of lulling the snake to sleep before the Rude awakening. So there you go. Continuing on. Gene is in with Jake and Cheryl. Jake says he isn't insulted, but Cheryl is, and he's going to make Rude pay. Rude and his tights will go down tonight. And a rarity for us, Scott, I think it's maybe happened one other time, but this was the main event of our last show and the first match of this show. So we talked about Rude and Roberts to close MSG October 88, and here we are to open up. Sorry, it's the main event. With the same match. So big blow-off spot for this feud. It's been raging since the summer, as we saw. Rude shows off his Cheryl tights and gyrates as the Roberts family stalks out. Jake keeps blaming all this on keeps blaming all this on Cheryl, says that whoever gets their finisher first should take this one. Jake attacks at the bell and starts to twerk the arm and twist the fingers as Rude tries like hell to get away. Rude dodges a DDT and slides to the floor. Jesse calls a desperation attempt by Jake. Rude goes to the eyes, dodges a clothesline, hits a shoulder block. Jesse says that Jake is too fired up and the tights have gotten to him as Rude works him over with strikes. Rude gestures at Cheryl and then shoots Jake hard to the corner as Jesse just keeps shitting all over her. Jake catches a distracted Rude with a clothesline and unloads, battering Rude and then holding him near the apron so Cheryl can slap him. And Jesse did not like that one. Cheryl gets sent away after a break. Rude posts Jake, but Jake comes back with a flurry. Rude backdrops Jake and lands some elbows and a fist off the top. Rude looks to be in control, but Jake catches him with a float over and hits a DDT. Instead of covering, though, he pulls off Rude's tights, which Jesse flips out about. Heenan comes in and draws the DQ and waves out Andre, who power walks to the ring and saves his boss by battering the Wary Snake. So why don't we pause here for a second? Let's talk about the match itself, and then we'll get into the post-match. I got a bunch of notes on that. So I went 2.5 on the match, which I thought was fine. It was kept at a good pace. No Rude wrestles, which was nice. That helped a lot. I thought they could use a little bit more time to get things crisp, but it was one of Rude's better matches. Again, at 2.5, he continues to kind of struggle with putting out any kind of classic. But it's fine. I'll take it. And then, like I said, we'll get to the post-match in a minute. So what did you think about the match itself, Scott?
I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was fine. I thought we were treated to something much better earlier in the week at the Garden. Mm-hmm. Again, chance to tell a story. And, yeah, obviously there's a formula when you're dealing with a combination of either house show matches and Saturday Night's Main Event matches. You and I have watched more than enough of both, so as have you, Peter. And you can always tell that when there's a combination of guys and you're seeing two different venues or two different styles, what happens? They couldn't do this the match they had Monday at the Garden tonight because, you know, unlike MSG, there's a time constraint. So you really can't get into the real deep storytelling that both these guys ended up.
Don't you think I think that stip may have actually worked in a short setting, because all you got to do is whack the finisher. So, like, you don't really need to wear the guy down, especially with a move like the DDT, where Jake can just snap it off quick. So I actually thought that stip maybe could have worked. So I don't know your thoughts on that. But also, were you surprised that the finish was wonky here, given that this is probably it?
It was definitely wonky. I agree. Jake's smart enough to – he had no problem going for the pin at the Garden, and then he doesn't go. And then he said he goes for the tights here. Like, that was kind of odd. You figured he just goes for the. If he's going to finish the feud off, you know, in the local market, why don't you just finish the feud off, in the national scene? So I did find it strange that he didn't just get the pin and take care of business, because what we're about to discuss in a moment could have worked either way. But I mean, the match again, I gave it 2 stars. Nothing awful. It was fine. But yeah, the finish kind of, I don't understand the logic there. He had no problem. With getting the pin at the Garden earlier in the week. But now that we're on national TV, we got to get some goofy ending with, they talked about the tights, like, for the first 15 minutes of the show, from the promos and everything.
Well, it was
Cheryl's.
Kind of the crux of their feud. It's been a big part of the feud, but I'm just surprised they didn't just blow it off here, because this is pretty much the end.
Yeah,
we get a little blip on our next show, but.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I was kind of perplexed too, Peter, that there was no ending. Your thoughts on the match? I thought it was fine. Not as good as the one at the Garden, but it was solid.
See, I think I liked it more than you guys. I went 3 stars, although maybe I am guilty of including the post match as part of that rating.
Right.
One thing I didn't like was Jesse completely overdoing it on commentary with the Robin Givens references, because that stuff does not age well, especially what happened with her and Tyson. Right. Just sort of thinking, and well, Tyson's his own deal. I have a confession, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm oddly attracted to Cheryl Roberts.
I knew you were going to say that.
I don't know what it is about that modestly attractive woman, but she just does it for me. I don't know what it is.
Is it the frizzy 88 hair? Is that what it is?
She takes care of that coif. I do have to say there's a lot of product, a lot of ozone dyed to create that hairdo for Cheryl.
There's a lot of white snake played in the background while that hair was being fixed up.
For whatever reason, a lot of people are like, oh, how come this didn't have the proper blow off? And they forget about this match, whatever. And it might be because of the post-match angle or whatever. But just think about this feud and how, like, both guys beforehand, what was Rude doing and what was Jake doing? Jake wasn't doing anything because he had just been floundering since the middle of 87. Mm-hmm. And Rude was having bad matches with Ricky Steamboat, for God's sakes. So they both came out of this stronger. I think it's a very rare feud where both guys come out of it in a much better place than when they started. And I think that's part of why it's remembered so fondly. As for the finish, you know, when he goes to rip off the tights, you had said, well, why doesn't he just try to pin him? Well, Jake knows that this is on NBC and on national television. So this is a much bigger audience than the MSG network and whoever's in the arena. So now he wants to really embarrass him by completely disrobing him. And so I can understand it from that perspective. But Heenan is so fearless with his his run. It's so great. I mean, yeah, he's just the best.
He goes like on autopilot, and then when it hits him, what's going on is it's awesome. He's like, oh, shit. Like, he just dives in there without thinking. It is technically the blow off. Like I said, on our next show, I think it's kind of the actual blow off. This is kind of the nominal blow off match, but Survivor Series is kind of like the actual finish. Like, that's where things end. And we kind of get some closure. So we'll see it then. But I was always just a little surprised that we didn't get a clean finish here. All right. So let's get to the post match. So Heenan comes in, draws a DQ, and he weighs out Andre the Giant. Andre comes out, saves Heenan, and beats on the snake. Jake bails and grabs Damian, and that just freezes Andre in his tracks, with the Giant actually showing fear, and that shocks Vince and Jesse. Jake throws a snake on Andre. Giant freaks out. He stumbles around, collapses to his knees. He's rolling on his back, grabs his chest, and then passes out as Damian's just slithering all over him. Jake is celebrating. Bobby's crying, trying to revive Andre while calling for help. Just so a wild scene there, and then we'll get to after the break in a second, but I thought the post-match, to me, like you said, Peter, I guess if you look at it as all one, I could see the bump to the match grade because it's really well done. And Andre, the first time, really has a known fear, which we haven't seen out of him since, you know, his run in WWF, really, or I don't know if ever. But and the feud really now transitions here as well, Rude to Andre for Jake. So Jake kind of gets a last laugh on Rude. Now he gets a laugh on Andre. He stands tall, but he now has bigger issues than he had with Rude trying to bang his wife. He now has this angry Giant that's going to come looking for him. So they accomplished a lot in this one segment, and it was kind of a hot one across the board. So what did you think of the angle itself, Peter?
Oh, I thought it was great, starting with the fact that Andre, he lost all the checkered stuff that he'd had in the past with the jacket.
Yes.
But he's dressed exactly like Archie Bunker here, which was a little weird. But given some of the racist stuff that he had said to Bad News Brown, maybe kind of in line with what Andre actually was. The fact that they made it too much like a heart attack, you know, it's just a simple fading spell.
Right. They definitely made it like a heart attack, yeah.
Yeah, where Bobby is like hitting him on the chest and stuff. I love Jesse going, give him mouth to mouth, Bobby. it was nice to see Heenan actually acting human and being nice to his own guy instead of being the weasel and all that. And it is interesting to see, you know, somebody standing tall over Andre. But it is my theory, and I know this might be a little outlandish, I think Andre totally faked this in the kayfabe universe to get out of the building so they didn't have to hang out and watch Patera versus Bravo later on in the show.
It's definitely possible. And it's a layup. I mean, of course, they're clearly going to get him out of there. They don't want to risk any future medical issues. I will say this. I think Jerry Lawler is lucky that they took heart attacks more seriously decades later.
Oh, yeah.
When he had his, I mean, if this was 88, yeah. Lawler would have been dead probably because Heenan would have been crying. They would have been cracking jokes as he laid there in the ring. So it was lucky for him that things evolved.
Mm. Yes.
I got to be honest, and I'll I understand Andre's doing it for the better of the company, and I'll expound more on this as we go through this feud. I was not a fan of this whole Andre scared of animals thing. I think Andre should have stayed with this whole aura of invincibility. I don't think they should have gotten so dramatic with him falling down and everything. I mean, you know, being like wary of a snake is one thing, but to be like deathly afraid for a guy who's been in the business this long and has this aura about him, heel or not, I was never crazy about, I got to be honest. I get that you need to keep your distance from snakes, obviously. I mean, they're not exactly, you know, poodles, but to be like to the point where you're like fainting, 500-pound guy fainting over, I don't know. I didn't buy it. I didn't buy it at all.
Well, not a panic attack.
Also, because Scott, you're a fan who probably remembers when he appeared on the Snake Pit without incident back in 86. Yep. So my question is, what happened with Andre and snakes between the end of 86 and this point?
Maybe one came out of his toilet.
I bought that Andre the Giant book hoping to find out these answers, and it didn't give me anything.
I don't know. I didn't mind it because in a way, like, I think you have to look at it this way. So Andre's been presented just as this unbeatable giant, right? The only guy that's ever really handed him his lunch is Hogan. Even Savage couldn't get it done. So Hogan's really the only guy who's ever beaten him. And even then, it was only really at three. I mean, since then, Andre's kind of owned him. Like, has Hogan really gone over, besides WrestleFest, which wasn't seen widely, Andre's kind of owned them since. Survivor Series, he wins. Main Event, he wins. WrestleMania 4, they both get screwed, and Andre kind of wins because his goal was to take Hogan. So, like, he's really only been taken out once. You can't just start working him into feuds now in the upper mid-card, in the mid-card, without some kind of equalizer, right? So you see him kind of get into a scrap with Duggan, and Duggan uses the board. So, I think they just do it to even the playing field a bit. I think that's why they did the snake, to make Jake a threat. Because why would anyone believe like Jake could beat Andre one-on-one when literally nobody's been able to do it except for Hulk Hogan once? So I think that's kind of the route they went and why they brought the snake into play.
Yeah.
I didn't have an issue bringing the snake into play. I just thought that it didn't need to be this overly dramatic, oh my God, wow, he's fainting, holy shit kind of thing. I could see Andre like not moving, like maybe, you know, Jake has the snake in his hand and Andre stops, kind of looks, you know, with that, still has that look of, you know, that Andre intimidation look, but deep down you're like, is he really intimidated? You know, very subtle and kind of like back up, and like he tells Bobby, you know, we'll get our time, we'll pick our spot, we'll pick, almost like hiding it.
Yeah, but even then, I don't think it's enough for Jake. Like, the snake was such an equalizer that it could take Andre out. Like, I think that's what it needed to be to give Jake always had that ace card in his trump card in his sack, you know, that he could just unleash, right. Unleash a snake from his sack at any moment and cause Andre to,
I don't know,
pass
out. I had no issue with the snake as an equalizer. I just thought they, from the creative point, they just kind of went overboard, but that's fine. I get the whole, you know, Jake's this little scrawny guy that's not going to beat Andre clean, but the fact Andre looks at a snake and shits his pants, we all have our fears. But Peter's got a good point. Although, of course, you know, it is WWF in the 80s where you're supposed to forget things after 6 months. The statute of limitations on remembering something is
maybe
ends,
he was
so, yeah.
Maybe he had taken some pills or something before the snake pit to calm down.
to go from not fearing them to fearing them, I figured it'd be the other way around. But anyway, we digress.
No,
but
maybe he took them because he was afraid and he took them to calm himself so he could get through the snake pit. That's what I'm saying.
Anyway, it's good that we transitioned off Rude. It's been a long enough feud. We go back to April with this. So it's good that we move on to something else for both guys. So.
Yeah, I'd be curious where Rude goes because he needs something now to keep. Like Peter said, both guys kind of came out of this the better given where they were. But Jake's obviously moving on to something pretty big. Feud with Andre is a big deal. Will Rude get something equal? So we'll see. After the break, Andre has regained consciousness. He's receiving help from medics and Heenan, and then he eventually has walked off, which is another funny scene with him kind of fucking holding onto the table and like breathing heavy. And like it's just Jesse. Like, no one else really cares or gives a shit. So anyway, actually, was that the Jesse part or is that later? Man, I'm getting those confused.
It was the interview near the end.
That's later. So this is just him getting checked out. That's right. All right, Gene is with the Hart Foundation, who are sick of Jimmy Hart and his megaphone and his voice. Anvil says Jimmy lost them their titles, and he not won it for them. Brett says there are no secrets that Jimmy can tell, and Anvil says Jimmy can only hurt someone by managing them. Jesse is then with Demolition, Fuji, and Jimmy Hart, who shits on his old charges, wants to prove that they are nothing without him, and he has told everything he knows to Fuji. The champs are confident, and Jesse asked about the Rougeaus, and Jimmy says they are here to observe. And that leads us to our big SummerSlam Tag Team Championship rematch as the Hart Foundation takes on Demolition. And you could tell they really were enjoying this angle and how things played out at SummerSlam because they pretty much just redo it here with Jimmy at ringside, giving the tips to Fuji and the insider secrets. And that was the big crux of the match at SummerSlam. And I guess they probably wanted to redo it for the national audience, even though it's a few months later. They're still pushing along with it. And I feel like this Rougeaus thing is like really slow burnt for a while. Like the whole like them going with Jimmy, it's like months. I feel like we've been talking about them slowly edging heel. So the Harts get another shot at the titles. They got to deal with Jimmy again. Axe and Anvil open up with Neidhart, wins that battle, but quickly gets trapped and double teamed. Anvil gets two on a suplex on Smash, and then tags Brett, who gets right to work with fast paced offense. Smash cuts off Brett and takes control, and he and Axe start to quick tag and keep the Hitman trapped. Fuji sneaks over and chokes Brett with his cane, and the champs keep using their raw power to dominate, working in tight chin lock. Brett survives a lengthy beating, catches Smash with a clothesline, and tags Anvil to a big pop. Anvil cleans house and has the champs on the ropes, getting two off a power slam with Axe making the save. Things break down, and all four go at it as Rougeaus show up. Brett decks Fuji. Anvil yanks Jimmy into the ring as things spin out of control. Ray Rougeaus ties up the Anvil. Jacques tosses Smash the megaphone. He bashes Anvil with it and gets the win. Well-executed, hot finish, furthers the Hart's issue with Jimmy and the Rougeaus. Good stuff, but it really wouldn't hurt Demolition to get out of this drama into their own issue. Like, they really haven't had their own thing going on now for a while. I can't even think, like, I guess Strikeforce was kind of a feud, but I mean, they really haven't even had a feud yet, honestly. That's that. And I thought this was fun, but just a step behind SummerSlam, 2.5. So, Scott, I'm curious your thoughts on the match. And also what Demolition has been as a team. Like, they've been champions, not really in a feud. Now they've kind of found themselves mixed up with this Jimmy Hart stuff for a few months. Like, they kind of need something on their own. I enjoyed the match again, just a notch below SummerSlam.
I gave it 2 stars. The thing with Demolition, I feel like since WrestleMania 4, it's been almost like a like they're going to hit parade. Mm-hmm. Like, the storyline was we're just going to mow down every babyface team that gets in our way. We're going to own this division. Like, that's the storyline. Not really spelled out, but that's kind of what they spent the summer doing. They fight the Bees. They fight the obviously Hart Foundation. They fight the Bulldogs. They fight every big time babyface team, the Rockers. And their goal is keeping their titles. So that's the storyline. Is it juicy? No, but I mean, you're talking about a powerhouse team here. So I feel that was kind of the storyline. But now to kind of get mixed up is like, I don't know, Jimmy Hart's revenge hitmen or whatever the hell it was, no pun intended, is a little convoluted, I guess.
Well, to me, it was fine once, like at SummerSlam. It was kind of a one-time thing. Jimmy, like, Hart's got the title match. Jimmy was out to fuck them. Kind of redoing it all here and keeping Demolition in this muck felt like maybe a bit much. I actually would have preferred if they did Rockers Demolition that we saw at MSG, if they did that here.
Yes.
For the national audience. Get the Rockers established in front of a national audience. Because the Harts are pretty much already on to the Rougeaus. This felt like they wanted to just get it out there, but it felt also moldy at the same time because we had kind of been months past it now. Like, to roll it back out for the national audience. So it was just like bad timing that they didn't happen to have a Science Man event close to SummerSlam. So they hold on to it and do it here. But that's what I would have went with.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, obviously, we're coming up on the next big show of the year, as Peter mentioned, Survivor Series in about 4 weeks. So maybe things happen there. But, yeah, I feel like Demolition really was just here to, to take on their the babyface hit parade But yeah, they need something focused now instead of just being the champions, just taking everybody out. I think they need a specific story now. And Peter, I think hopefully that comes soon. But what do you think of the match?
I only had it at 2 stars. I wasn't that crazy about what they were trying to do here. And I think part of it might be like the type of fans that we are, where we're invested in everything pay-per-view. And like, this is just a rerun for us. I mean, it's kind of weird how they pretended like SummerSlam never happened. I mean, you know, the Hearts got screwed over pretty good there, but there's absolutely no mention of it because they're going to do the exact same thing. It's kind of like you have a nice meal at home, and then you have leftovers, you put them in the fridge, and then you forget about them for 5 or 6 days, and then you're like, oh, and then you put it in the microwave. This is basically the microwave version of that SummerSlam match, which I think was better because they got more time. There was a little too much crowd sweetening on the audio in this match. I was kind of looking out for that on this show for whatever reason. I don't know why. Jesse made the comment, well, if the Hart Foundation still had Jimmy Hart, this wouldn't be happening. And I wrote, yeah, because they don't make heel versus heel matches for the titles. Well, they did have Jake versus Macho Man a couple of years ago, but in general, they're not going to do that. But yeah, I mean, we our type of fan had just seen this, so for me, it's just a big yawn, and I'm ready to move on to something else, whatever it might be.
All right, and that's how you could tell they loved. They must have really loved how things went for them to save it and redo it here. And yeah, whatever. It is what it is. But it seemed like they had moved on to Hart's Rougeau's demolition elsewhere already. And now, like, to go back to it, to your point, just felt like a rehash. But they're very into just, you know, treating this Saturday Night's Main Event audience as its own unique thing. We've talked about that. We've seen it. It almost lives in a vacuum quite a bit. So there you have it. Demolition retains. We'll see what their next thing is. As we move on, we revisit Harley Race getting injured earlier in the year on a Saturday Night's Main Event. Talk about callbacks against Hulk Hogan, which cost him his crown. Gene is with the new king, Haku, and Bobby Heenan, and wants to know why Bobby would risk things against Hulk Hogan here tonight. Heenan says Haku decreed this match to happen, and he'll get revenge on what happened to Harley. Haku refuses to speak. Gene talks to Hogan, who talks about being battered and bruised after an attack by Big Boss Man last week, and Scott will talk about that soon. However, despite that, he'll still handle Heenan and Haku. Liz comes in and tells Hogan they have a date. So a couple things here. Liz managing Hogan solo. Interesting, because of Mega Powers. And speaking of kind of living in its own universe with these Saturday's Main Events, they almost make it like Harley just got hurt and Haku just became king. You know, it's like that all just came to be to get it over in front of this audience. So it continues to kind of show that these really just exist in their own bubble and vacuum, the way they play this stuff up. So that does bring us to our next match. That is Hulk Hogan, no championship around his waist, but Miss Elizabeth by his side, taking on King Haku. And it's a big match for Haku on national TV. Scott, we talked about Haku lately, how he's been a bit disappointing as a solo act thus far to us. So let's see if he picks it up. Haku is carried out in a sedan for a big regal entrance. Jesse reveals that he'll have an exclusive interview with Andre the Giant later on. Hogan and Liz power out to a huge pop, but Jesse thinks it's peculiar seeing Liz without Savage. Vince explains that away real quick. Jesse thinks Haku is just as powerful as Hulk and quicker. Hulk holds the ropes open for Liz, and the crowd has gone nuts. Things get started as Vince calls Liz a charming woman. Haku lands a cheap shot and starts burying his martial arts strikes, as well as biting and clawing. Haku misses a punch. Hogan fires up and mows through the king, burying him with a clothesline and chopping away. Heenan hooks Hulk's ankle, and that allows Haku to take back over. There's so many H's in this match. Jesse calls Liz a mantelpiece as Haku goes to a nerve hold. Hogan breaks free, but Haku knocks him outside with a thrust kick. Jesse rants about Liz being worthless as a manager as Haku comes off the apron and accidentally hits Bobby as Hogan had yanked him in between. Hogan grabs the crown and puts it on. He prances around the ring, which pisses off Jesse. Heenan gets walked to the back, and after the break, Hogan is still working over Haku. Haku comes back with a clothesline and a falling headbutt. Hulk shakes off a suplex and hulks up, knifing through Haku and polishing him off with the leg drop. A tidy, perfectly acceptable TV match. Nice flow, limited downtime. The crowd's fired up. Just good, simple, basic for a national audience. Again, like you mentioned, Peter, kind of like a Cliff's Note version here tonight of a Hogan match. I went 2 stars on this, Peter. Give me your thoughts on the match and also your thoughts on Haku as a solo act.
Oh, well, that promo that he did where, you know, Heenan did all the talking because Haku doesn't talk because he doesn't have to. I could watch Haku just stare blankly into the distance forever. Like, I could just pause that on my TV for like 5 hours and I would never stop smiling at just to, like, the blank expression where he's like kind of looking up. It kind of makes him look like a king. He's carried by jobbers like a proper heel king is.
Always.
Going to the ring. There was something about Hogan saying, no king can fool me. And when I was watching, I said, yeah, no king can fool you, Hogan, but what about a crown prince? He'll get to you. Remember when Hogan used to take a stand against the concept of a royal ruling class? I mean, those were the days back in 1988. Yeah, Hogan got a little handsy with Liz's elbow. I don't know. I was kind of on the lookout for that. And did you notice that they kept kind of insinuating that this match was for the crown?
Yeah, they definitely did a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was kind of sad because I was hoping that Hogan would bust out the war bonnet fist helmet as his crown that he would he would wear as the new king.
Coming soon.
The other interesting thing about this match that Haku gets made the king even though he was in the middle of a legal issue where he had bit a guy's nose off in 88, which actually took place at the Airport Hotel in Baltimore where this match takes place. So I thought it was interesting that he was sort of returning to the scene of the crime from that perspective. But I certainly did like Haku.
Look, nobody besides him knows what happens in that hotel.
Well, hey, I'm not going to ask any questions. I'm not getting in the way. Hogan putting on the crown in the middle of the match, that made me laugh because, you know, he certainly liked putting stuff on the top of his head, and I think we know why. Wing.
Yes.
And was it just me or did the crowd seem a little lethargic during the Hulk up segment?
Yeah, they were into his arrival and then they definitely tapered off.
Yeah, I blame that on the 88 Orioles being so terrible that they were just beaten down so badly.
If that's the case, then nothing would ever get over in Baltimore if it goes by how the Orioles are doing. It's fucking every year is going to be dog shit.
But my least favorite thing of this match, and as you said, it was a perfectly good TV match, was that Elizabeth doing the ear thing is just the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she should never do the Hulk Hogan ear thing because she just looks so awkward. But actually, now that I think about it, Jesse Ventura's sarcasm regarding Hogan makes up for pretty much anything that would go wrong. So I know I said 1.5 stars. I'm bumping it up to 2 just for Jesse's sarcasm.
I give this a 2 as well. I mean, we had talked about JR, as you said, about Haku and his opponents and how he hasn't looked really that great. Well, and then I read off the match of the guys he had, and none of them really been in any great shakes. I mean, he's handed a good guy here in the sense that, you know, Hogan will give you a good TV match when he needs to. And so I thought the match was fine in that aspect. You know, Haku's a guy that, you know, Hogan can take Haku's bludgeoning.
Mm-hmm.
So that looked fine. The crown thing looked goofy. And I agree with you, Peter. Elizabeth trying to be funny just looks so, like, cringing. Like, you know, it's like usually she's better off cowering when Savage is a dick. But, but, you know, trying to, like, be, hey, look at me. I get to have fun. Oh, God. It's, like, dreadful. It's like, no, it's not going to work. That part just was rough, but I thought the match was fine. It's kind of neat actually seeing Hogan wrestle matches without the belt. It's got like a specialness to it for some reason. And I you know, obviously we see what happens down the line, but I thought it was kind of neat to have Hogan in this kind of odd, mm-hmm. like almost upper mid card, low main event level, which is very unlike him. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. I thought it served its purpose for Hogan, keep him fresh. Obviously, Savage had the evening off, so that's good. He deserves a rest as champion. He's had a busy summer. Hogan hasn't really done much of anything other than a couple of those, you know, the big matches, SummerSlam and WrestleFest. So, you know, Hogan working a little extra doesn't hurt. Yeah, so good match there, and Hogan gets the win. Doesn't hurt Haku any. It's Hogan. Who cares?
And, it's probably Haku's best solo match we've seen so far, but I mean, it's the Hogan formula is hard to fuck up. So, but
that's true. Yeah, it's really not much you got to do.
So, waiting for something better out of him. Like we talked about him so much in the tag setting and his, you know, legacy and everything else. But again, just in this solo run so far, just been nothing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I he hasn't really gotten. He's gotten a lot of big power guys that aren't matching up with him. Yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough right now for him. He needs to find some better competition. So, on that note, why don't we take a break? Mm-hmm. Not bad so far, JR, in-ring. Not too bad. Promo's been solid.
Been fine.
Jesse's been solid.
Yeah. Standard main event.
Standard main event. Peter, pretty much on par with the usual.
Yeah, this has been a very good start to the Saturday Night's Main Event, but let's see if they can keep it up after the break and maintain their momentum.
Well, we do have two matches left, and we will hop in on that. Or if Peter may think a match and a half, but we'll see. Anyway, let's take a break, and when we come back, two more matches to go. But first, because
this is fresh as the alpha, we should definitely.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place B Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceBNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place B Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlaceBNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceBNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Alright, Nation, we're back, episode 504 of the Place to Be Podcast, looking at the October 88 Saturday Night's Main Event. put the list of luminaries on this card. Of course, we talked about Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, Jake Roberts, Rick Rude, but one man, sadly, will not be featured here tonight, and that is Kokomo Beware. And of course, it was his theme song playing beneath us here tonight, and that is the number two song in the nation this week by the Beach Boys and Jesse Stamos. That is Kokomo, and that brings us into Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner. If I can pop, speaking of pops, if I pop Peter with multiple wisecracks in the lead-in to the song, I'm pumped.
I think he wrote Kokomo Beware, praying that we would get that song at some point down the line. Anyway, yes, number one song in the land, the same as last week. So JR playing the number two song, Groovy Kind of Love by Phil Collins, is your number one song once again. Kokomo from the movie Cocktail. And number three, Wild Wild West by the Escape Club.
And Will Smith.
Yeah, and that came out. That's right. I like that version better. Well, it's two different songs. Anyway, of course, I'm trying to remember. Was this song in Pretty Woman? No, I don't think it was. Red Red Wine by UB40 at number four. Mm-hmm. At number five, What's on Your Mind by Information Society. Number six, Don't You Know What the Night Can Do by Steve Winwood, more popular in is it Bud Light or Miller Lite commercials? I think it's Miller Lite. Number seven, JR's girl Kylie Minogue with the Locomotion. Number eight,
out of my head.
Number eight, Never Tear Us Apart by INXS. Number nine, One Moment in Time by Whitney Houston. And of course, that song's popular if you're a college basketball fan because CBS always plays it. I think this is what they play at the end of every NCAA tournament. They play One Moment. I think that's what this is. I think they play one Moment in Time.
What is One Shining Moment?
Oh, One Shining Moment.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so it's not One Moment in Time. Okay. I knew it was Moment something. So anyway, this is One Moment in Time by Whitney at number nine. And number 10, Bad Medicine by Mr. Bon Jovi and the Bon Joviites. So there's your top 10. And for the second straight week, Groovy Kind of Love by Phil Collins is your number one song. All right, JR, let's go to the theater from the night before. Only two movies this week.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is a fine comedy with a couple of ladies in it. The movie is called...
Bridesmaids.
No. There was... No. The Bridesmaids we know was not a remake. It was not, okay. was not a cover, a remake, or whatever. The movie is called Feds. F-E-D-S. Feds.
Fez. Okay. So that's the mini show.
Fez.
Hey, I read something about Fez, about what that name meant. Have you seen that going around on Twitter?
Really? Well, didn't he always change the country like every five episodes? Wasn't that the running gag? Like nobody knew where he was from.
Well, I saw someone say that it was short for foreign exchange student. They didn't know his name. They just called him Fez.
Oh, I'd never even
That might have actually been said in one of the early episodes because I watched the whole series. I bet you it was said in one of the early episodes.
I don't know. Yeah. Somebody, I still saw that pop on Twitter one day. I was like, oh, there you go. I don't know if it's true or not, but what I do know is true is that Ellie DeWitt is a former U.S. Marine who wants to become an FBI agent. However, while she has great physical skills, she struggles at the academic level. Conversely, her roommate Janice Zuckerman is as smart as they come, just like her sister Andrea, but physically weak. Overcoming the male recruits' assumptions of them, Ellie and Janice team up to help each other with basic training. Starring Rebecca De Mornay, Mary Gross, Fred Dalton Thompson, James Luisi, Rex Ryan, Don Stark. Rex Ryan is Parker.
Yes. Hey, Rebecca, nice toes. By the way, according to the wiki page, yes, Fez was born August 4th, 1960. His real name is deemed unpronounceable by his friends, so they call him Fez, short for foreign exchange.
There you go.
The series' official website explains the spelling Fez with a Z as opposed to S with a Fez with an S as, quote, poetic license. Hmm. Red usually called him a foreign kid or by a random foreign name through various backgrounds. Haji, Tonto, Anwar, Sabu, Muhammad Ali. He called him Muhammad Ali one episode. Alibaba. Etc.
Suppose Jesse wasn't playing fucking
Red Warren.
Exactly. It's weird to think that like those characters like Fez and like be 58 right now because he was born 1960, right, in the show.
That's right. Yeah,
it's a weird thing.
I know, right? Isn't that crazy? And the only other movie that came out was this is a experimental anthology musical. This is a big deal for this time. Moonwalker.
In the days leading up to the moon landing, Nope. This is 2015 Moonwalker.
No, wrong moon. No, wrong Moonwalker. One less doll.
The film segments are meant to represent the different stages of Michael Jackson's career because it's an experimental anthology musical film starring Michael Jackson. Rather than featuring one continuous narrative, the film's collection of short films about Jackson, several of which long form music videos from Jackson's Bad album. The film is named after the dance technique, the moonwalk, which Jackson was known for performing. First segment of Moonwalker is a live performance of Man in the Mirror during his Bad World tour. The second segment is a 10-minute biographical film about Jackson covering the early years of the Jackson 5. Featuring a lot of songs, Music and Me, I Want You Back, ABC, and on and on. Batter is the third segment, a parody of the music video for Bad's title song. Speed Demon, the fourth segment, Leave Me Alone. The fifth segment, Smooth Criminal, comes from there. And then Come Together and the closing credits. Starring Michael Jackson, Joe Pesci, Sean Lennon, Brandon Quinton Adams. There you go.
Yes. So. It was actually very good. I saw it on I rented it on VHS. I did not watch it to see it in the theater, but I rented it. It was pretty cool. Very interesting.
It ran 92 minutes, so pretty good length.
Yeah, pretty good length. The first of a few movies done by artists over the next couple of years. Madonna would do one, and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Talk more about that as we go along. Speaking of moonwalking, JR has been moonwalking over his pick opponents. You know what that means. Let's take the field. All right, now, Peter, going in, just to give you some background, since you're since this is your first appearance since this 1988 NFL season started, of course, in the past, JR has consistently kicked poor Kelly Nelson's butt from one end of the end zone to the other. So this year, we are doing JR versus the world. So every guest that joins us on the Place to Be podcast during this football season of 1988 will make their picks. Mr. D'Amato did back-to-back weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And did pretty good, JR, as we indicated, right? Aren't you tied right now?
We are. He won the first week by two, and I won last week by two. I feel like this is the song we should be playing when Pete's on, by the way. It's a very Pete-sounding song.
Yes,
it is. Rumbling up to the fucking tailgate buffet with this song playing.
You know, I actually downloaded that song from iTunes.
This one?
Yes.
Spotify has an entire NFL Films collection.
Yeah, it was some NFL Films thing. The guy's name is Sam Spence, who did a lot of those songs back. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, well,
you are our.
That's a fun fact. There is the when I was working for NFL liaison with NFL Network, I was with Scott's company, and they asked me what I wanted as like a going away gift. I asked for the NFL Films music collection. She could not produce it, so I was very upset. She's like, "What do you want as a gift?" I'm like, "Get me the NFL Films music CD." And now I can just listen to them anywhere I want. But at the time, it would have been cool to have the CDs.
Big deal, absolutely.
Well, let me tell you that I am married to somebody whose aunt works at the NFL, so I have been able to get some merchandise, some merchandise that I particularly enjoy, losing team merchandise from various Super Bowls over the last couple of years that I am not allowed to post pictures of on social media, but I enjoy them all greatly.
I found a my mom's old coworker's husband was what the hell is his name now? He was like this GM, was it AJ Smith? GM for the Chargers, do you remember?
I remember somebody by that name being a GM of a team. I can't remember exactly which.
He's the executive vice president and general manager of the Chargers.
That sounds right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see the when he graduated college. Yeah, so he went to Hendricken in Warwick. And then, anyway, he was promoted to general manager, then Chargers. John Butler died of cancer. He doesn't have much on what he did in between. But anyway, I think I don't know if he worked for the Bills or he worked somewhere, but he went to the Super Bowls, like the early ones, and he must have been with the Chargers because I found like an actual little placard thing that he brought me back from the Super Bowl when the Chargers played the Niners. So anyway, that was a long way to say I found some old football memorabilia from this weird tie I had with this guy.
All right. Well, since we were in the same week as Mr. D'Amato had, he did the games from week 8. Peter, you are going to do the games from the following day. So it is week number 9 of the 1988 NFL season. So we will begin at the Vet, otherwise known as the Concrete Toilet. Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, the Eagles host the Atlanta Falcons, JR.
Oh, Brad versus Chad. I will go Eagles.
And if they had an, if they did a show, they could debate it. Peter.
I think the Falcons were pretty crummy back then, so I'll go with the Eagles as well.
Well, Randall Cunningham threw for 289 yards, but the Falcons win 27 to 24.
4.5 stars.
There's him right, that fucker. Let us go to Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands, where the J-E-T-S Jets take on the Pittsburgh Steelers, Peter.
I'm going to go Jets on this one.
Yeah, me too. Gangrene. Curtis Martin has a good day.
Bubby Brister. Bubby Brister threw for 238 yards, but indeed, the Jets win 24-20. Let's go to Foxborough. I don't know if it was still Sullivan Stadium at this point or if they changed it to Foxborough Stadium. Who knows?
It is Sullivan.
The shithole anyway. Where the Pats host the Chicago Bears in a Super Bowl 20 rematch from a few years earlier, JR.
The Bears.
Okay, this Peter? Probably isn't fair because I actually remember this game very, very well. It's the Patriots.
You know who the quarterback was?
It was Mr. Doug Flutie, a man who has a street named after him in, I think, Framingham, Mass.
Yeah, 165 yards passing. Pats win 30-7.
It's not fair.
Let's go to the Superdome in New Orleans. The Saints host the Los Angeles Rams, Peter.
I'll go with the Rams in that one.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Rams win 12-10. Let's go to Texas Stadium in Irving, where the Cowboys.
Right, so Rams Saints, huh? That's funny. That was this past week. It was not 12-10.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
We did, that's two straight weeks that we've had that. Because last week, didn't we have Giants and Falcons?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we did.
That was pretty funny. All right. We go to Texas Stadium in Irving, where the Cowboys taking on the Phoenix Cardinals, JR.
I'll take your boys at home.
Peter?
I'm going to go with Phoenix because I recall Dallas being putrid that year.
Well, the Cowboys are played about as good in this game as they're playing right now. Cardinals win 16-10. Let us go to the Big Sombrero, Tampa Stadium in Tampa. The Bucks host the Miami Dolphins, the Battle of Florida, Peter.
Oh, I'm going to go with Dan Marino over Vinny Testaverde here, so Miami.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, Vinny did not play, but former Bills star Joe Ferguson threw for 291 yards. But yes, the Dolphins did win 17-14. Let's go to Cleveland, the old Municipal Stadium, the Mistake by the Lake, where the Browns host the Bengals in the Battle of Slohio, JR.
I'll go Cincy on the road.
I'm going to go with Cleveland in that AFC Central Classic.
Well, both teams were actually very good in 88, and the Browns take it at home, 23-16. Kozar throws for 210 yards. Let's go to Buffalo, Rich Stadium, where the Bills take on the Green Bay Packers. Peter?
Well, this is the pre-Rodgers Packers, so I'll go with the Bills.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, the Magic Man, Don Majkowski, was quarterbacking the Packers, and the Bills win 28-0, 116 yards for rookie Thurman Thomas.
Ooh, just got his number retired, I think,
last
week.
Yeah, he did. Let's go to the Mausoleum in L.A., the Raiders, and the Kansas City Chiefs, Peter. I'm sorry, JR.
I'll take the Raiders at home.
I'm thinking that Bo Jackson would have been back by now, so I'll go with the Raiders because there's probably Tecmo Bowl Bo Jackson.
Well, Bo only rushed for 80 yards. In Tecmo, he'd have done that in a play, but the Raiders do win 17-10. Let's go to the Silverdome in Pontiac, the Giants and the Lions, Peter.
Oh, well, at least Parcells Giants. I'll go with the Parcells Giants.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Giants win in overtime, 13-10. Let's go to Candlestick out in San Francisco. The 49ers hosting the Minnesota Vikings, JR.
Niners.
Yeah, I'm not picking against Joe Montana.
Well, Joe Montana was hurt. I don't know who Wilson is. Wade? I don't know who Wilson is, but...
Well, Wade Wilson would have been the quarterback for the Vikings, I think, right?
So, yeah. So, it looks like Steve Young actually started. He rushed for 72 yards, but the Niners did win 24.
Oh, wait a second. That was the year that Bill Walsh decided to screw with Joe Montana by occasionally benching him for Steve Young, which I didn't quite understand what that was trying to accomplish, but... Hey, Steve Young turned out okay, too.
Yeah, he did. He did. Let's go to the Kingdom in Seattle. The Seahawks hosting the Chargers, Peter.
Seahawks, I guess.
I'll take the Chargers.
Seahawks win 17-14. Let's go to the Astrodome in Houston, where the Oilers host the Washington Redskins, JR.
Houston.
I'm going to go with Washington.
Well, the Redskins were the defending world champions, but the Oilers win big, 41-17. And finally, Monday night, Halloween night, from the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, the Colts hosting John Elway and the Denver Broncos. Peter.
Denver.
Yeah, Denver.
Colts 55, Jesus. Broncos 23.
Wow.
What did the Broncos think? Were they were in the Super Bowl then or something? My God.
Chris Chandler was the quarterback for the Colts. How about that, huh? Eric Dickerson rushed for 159 yards. Broncos win by 32 points. So, JR, what's the tally?
Tough week for your boy. So it is 11-8 on the week for Peter. So now at three, I'm in the three-point hole, even though I don't think the pass one should count. It's not fair. But it's
what, because I actually remember it like a Mary Lou Henner or something?
You need to get like Logan or some shit on this so that it's not going to fucking wasn't alive for any of this stuff.
No, you want to know what it was, is for episode 88 of Greetings from Allentown, I was trying to find the clip of a Doug Flutie touchdown pass from that game, and because it's the NFL, you can't find stuff on YouTube as readily, so I did remember the Patriots-Bears. I couldn't remember what week that was, though, so kind of lucked out there.
Whatever.
Well, well done, Peter. We'll see who our next guest will do if they can maintain this three-point lead for the world against JR. Finally, the 1988-89 NHL season has begun. Of course, the Edmonton Oilers, your defending world champions, of course, the expense guys of our Boston Bruins. But there was a big trade in the summer because this is the first season for Wayne Gretzky in L.A., if you remember correctly. The Bruins and Sabres played to a 3-3 tie on this night at the Garden. Listen to these names, guys, Peter. Scoring the three goals for Buffalo. Phil Housley had a pair, and Pierre Turgeon with a goal for the Sabres. Ooh. And for the Bruins, Bob Sweeney, Craig Janney, and, of course, the great Ray Bork with goals for the Bruins.
I look forward to Bennett talking for 20 minutes in the live chats about this game later.
And the Whalers with a shutout of the Devils, 3-0. Kevin Dineen, two guys I've met, actually. Kevin Dineen and Ron Francis with the goals for the Whale. And that is it for your pop culture corner. Let's go back to Baltimore, where there's no NHL team.
Nope. Gene is with Bravo and Frenchie Martin, who's still talking about that fucking weightlifting record. Bravo shits on Olympians, calling them all cheaters, and says the flag won't protect Kenny Patera tonight. Gene's then with Patera, who has trimmed his mullet a bit. Hair somehow looks worse. Patera says he'd rather die than dishonor his country, and quotes Jim Duggan, of all fucking people. Says he'll stamp Dino's passport tonight. So a lot going on here with this big Haas fight as Dino Bravo takes on Kenny P. Start with a stalemate shoulder block, and Patera comes firing away, sends Dino scurrying. Dino returns and starts to club and hammer away. Bravo chokes in the corner. Patera fights through it and buries an elbow to the nose. Patera goes to the full Nelson, but Bravo runs to the corner to block it. Patera eats a boot on a charge and stooges around, and then Dino gets an atomic drop inside suplex for the win. Kept short enough not to hurt, but God, it was useless. Bravo keeps bravoing. Patera is completely out of steam, and his hair is not doing anything for anyone at this point. it's like he cut the mullet, and now it just looks like a perm. And it's brutal. It's just brutal. It's awful.
You got no better. No.
I went a half a star just because I thought, you know, again, I've been a bit of a face Patera mark out there, but no bueno otherwise, Scott.
No, I agree 100%. I gave this half a star. It sucked. Patera just has no juice left. You could tell he's on the last legs of his contract. And Bravo, as we've seen, is literally the worst wrestler in this entire company. I seriously, if you go through the entire roster, 1988 WWF, I'm curious if you agree or not, Peter. Dino Bravo is literally the worst wrestler in this entire company. He is absolutely horrendous. I mean, he doesn't know psychology, doesn't sell anything. He fumbles around. He's like can't do moves. He's not mobile. He's not limber. I mean, he's a fucking disaster. Doesn't tell stories in the ring. He just kind of fumbles his way through the motions. Rough, very rough.
Well, I was trying to think, actually, on when I was driving home from work, and I don't know why I thought of this. I'm like, what was the best Dino Bravo match from his 1986 to 1991 run? And then I decided to focus on the road because that was much more important. God, where do I even begin to unpack on this? Basically, I no longer fear death because I sat through Ken Patera versus Dino Bravo on Saturday Night's Main Event. Let's see. In the pre-match, you got Frenchie Martin talking. Check. Dino Bravo being shitty. Check. He's saying the fleur-de-lis when it's the fleur-de-lis. Okay. You got a babyface Patera promo. And I know you guys have been defending him, and I've been very interested in hearing you guys, you know, actually come to his defense through 87 and into 88. But this is the point when you get to, like, SummerSlam and just after, where even Gorilla Monsoon flips on him on commentary, because Gorilla would always put Patera over by saying, oh, Kenny is the one who gave me a negative attitude because he beat him in a retirement match in 1980. So it was a nice little callback. At this point, Gorilla is like now openly starting to say that maybe Kenny should hang it up himself.
Yeah,
and
well
that
done.
maybe Patera should retire. The only positive thing about this match and the only thing that generated stars was when Jesse said that Patera is not averse to breaking rules. And I said, yeah, that and fast food windows. side suplex is such a weak ass finisher, but that goes without saying. I mean, how much more negative can you say about Dino Bravo? I actually, and I'm sorry, I know this breaks the rules. I'm not a star rating guy. I gave this 1/32nd of a star because I had to reduce it down from a quarter of a star because I added a half star to the earlier Hogan Haku match from what I originally had. So, yeah, 1/32nd of a star for this one.
It's just a matter of time. Like I said before, and I said it to you, Mean Gene, I said it to everybody. It's just a matter of time when Ken Patera gets in full gear and runs the World Wrestling Federation, or rids the World Wrestling Federation of the likes of you, Weasel, and King Kong, Bundy, Ray, Hercules, Orndorff, all of you. You're all going to go down one by one, and I'm going to make sure of that. For the whipping that you gave me, whip me like a red-headed stepson, I'm sick and tired of that type of treatment. And when I get ready, when I'm in full gear, Heenan, Weasel, whatever you guys want to do, just bring it on, because I'm not going anywhere.
Yep. Red-headed, bad perm.
Awful.
I kept waiting for Patera to do like a Dan Quayle tribute thing. Like, what a waste it is to lose one's mind or not to have a mind at all. That was kind of the way he was going. God almighty, Ken Patera. Oh,
terrible.
The only thing about this match is it's a real battle for the Patera Award at the end of the show, because Frenchie Martin probably has the best hair of the three guys out there, which
it's rough.
Says it all.
Patera is his next level, though.
And maybe the most work rate.
You know, we have stuck up for him, and it's only because I think I thought he was like really awful, and now I think he's like, you know, he at least tries. He's out there like working hard, working at a decent clip and trying. And we haven't seen him get too exposed, because a lot of his matches we see him in are real quick. But yes, it's time. It's time for a lot of these guys, honestly. We'll see it as we move it to 89. But Patera's clock is about to expire. Mm-hmm. All right, Gene's in the back with Slick and the Big Boss Man. Slick says these beasts find him to manage them, not the other way around. Boss Man says he likes to hurt people, and he did just that to Hulk Hogan. And they will punish him just for breathing. And that brings us to our final match of the night, and that is Big Boss Man taking on Jimmy Powers. Showcase for the ever-rising Boss Man, who's made the leap in a big way with his brewing feud against Hogan, and since his debut has really just been kind of working squashes for the most part. Bossman punishes Powers right away, clobbering him with hard, heavy strikes. Powers gets a sleeper. Bossman quickly breaks, slugs Powers to the mat. Bossman keeps laying it in as Jesse says Hogan's going to stay out of Bossman's way for a long time after what happened on Superstars. Bossman hooks in a bear hug and then just drops him. Powers comes back with a flurry, hits a side slam for the win, and then Bossman cuts that off and hits a side slam for the win. Bossman cuffs Powers, smacks him around with a stick. And then nothing else after that, really. Nothing doing here. Just a squash to get Bossman showcased on national TV. I went half a star. I thought it was effective. And again, Bossman has just worked his way up, just beating guy after guy, and now finds himself in this program with Hulk Hogan, which is big time. So what did you think of this one, Peter?
Well, the first thing that I thought was, why not use Coco Beware in this spot?
We've seen that so many fucking times already.
Well, while we're pretending that SummerSlam never happened.
True.
I also, to be fair though, I also suggested Jim Brunzel.
Okay.
Or perhaps you could do be Brian Blair, where Bossman just beats the shit out of him for like 10 minutes. That would be fantastic as well. I really like Bossman as a squash guy. He might not be like those NWA dudes who would just chop the hell out of guys for like, you know, three straight minutes or whatever, but in the WWF setting, the boss man in the squash match environment was always really good. You could tell that they didn't have any plans for, even though the Young Stallions, we saw that they might be something about a year before this, that there were no big plans for Jim Powers because his little Saturday Night's Main Event logo just said Jim Powers. And it had like no, you know, no like Young Stallion thing to it or anything. Although, to be fair, Jim Powers is a great pun for a guy who's built the way he is. So I wonder if they could have gone in that sort of direction. But I gave this one star just because I like Boss Man in these squash matches, yeah, maybe more than most people. But what I do want is, when Slick is talking to the ref after the match to distract him as he's working him over with the nightstick, I would pay $5 for that transcript to find out what Slick is actually saying to him.
Or how about $5 for Jesse's translation of what he thinks Slick is saying? Because that's probably way worse.
I'll pay an extra $5 for that, yeah.
All right, Scott, give us your thoughts. Now I want to talk about Boss Man's rise in a minute. But I agree with you on him as a squash worker. He's been fun. Like, we've seen a lot of squashes with him now, and they've all been pretty entertaining.
Mm-hmm. I gave this a dud. This match was pretty awful. If you can't find Coco, you could find his brother Kokomo Beware, who could shake drinks in the corner before losing in 2 minutes. No, this match is awful, but because Jim Powers is terrible by himself. I mean, it was a good squash for Boss Man, continuing his ride up the ladder. And he's been good at, because his power moves are just so good, and because he's just such a big guy, he just looks good murdering dudes. But this match is crap, so I gave it a dud. It's forgettable. But it's a motivation for what we get at the end of the show, because all Boss Man is doing during the match is calling out Hogan. So that's really the linchpin here. It's not really the match itself. So, but you could see where they're going with this and how much they think of Boss Man, as he's really only wrestled jobber squashes, and they're already calling out the man.
Right.
So,
do you like the methodology that they've used here? Because it cuts both ways. Like, we don't get that natural progression of him working up the ladder, but on the flip side, he hasn't been exposed in any way, and he hasn't shown any weakness. He's just dominated these fucking jobbers, and now all of a sudden is in there with Hogan. So you don't know what he's got. Like, can Hogan take him down? Is he really this good, or just does he not have the competition? So I kind of like the way they did it, where this guy's red hot, he looks great, he looks strong, and just throw him in there. Don't even bother working him up the ladder. Don't let him get exposed against guys, you know, in the upper mid card like a Jake or something. You know, like, just let him go in right with Hogan and see what he can do and see if he can be a threat. Like, I kind of like the way they went about it, and they clearly thought very highly of Boss Man, like, right away.
I agree 100%.
Okay. I agree totally, because who else was Hogan going to face at that point, mm-hmm, until you get to, you know, just before WrestleMania? And he was the perfect opponent, like, you know, the big, you know, monster heel who, you know, was maybe a little bit more agile than some of the guys that he had been facing in the past. So something of a different look than what he was seeing. But you know, that feud was really, really good. Him, Hogan and Boss Man. One of Hogan's best opponents, I think, that he ever had.
And the beatdown that he had on Brother Love was really good too.
Oh.
Boss Man did a hell of a job executing it, and Hogan, to his credit, is good at selling when he gets the shit kicked out of him. So worked out well for both those guys. Yeah, definitely for Boss Man.
And we'll see them go at it quite a bit. So we got more to come with him, a decent amount to come. All right, we go back to Superstars. We see that where Boss Man beat the shit out of Hogan and Brother Love, and then Gene is with Hogan, who talks about his issues, and Boss Man says sooner or later they'll have a match, and Boss Man will go on trial. Gene then throws it to Jesse to wrap things up. He's with Andre and Heenan. Andre is all rattled, disheveled, hanging onto the table, shirt's all unbuttoned. Grabs Jesse, says, "I'm not afraid of snakes." Heenan rants about the snake, and Andre just keeps yelling at Jesse, who agrees the snake should be banned. I thought this was an amazing segment, just full of craziness and nonsense. I thought it was really well done. And
It was hilarious, yeah. It was great.
I loved him yelling at Jesse, just yelling at him throughout the whole thing. So really fun way to wrap up the show. Vince and Jesse then close things out. All right, so while go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think this is where Hogan's fascination with the legal system started, but it really wouldn't bear fruit until like 2015.
He's really, you could tell he's maybe starting to study a bit. You know, you start getting into something, you want to talk about it constantly, so he keeps bringing it up. All right, let's go with our awards here to wrap things up. Peter, what was your match of the night?
I'm going to go with Jake versus Rude.
Scott?
I concur. Jake versus Rude.
All right, Hearts versus Demolition. Okay. Stale as it was. All right, let's do this. S&P 500. All right. The Cousin Junior, the worst match of the night. I went with Bravo Patera. Does everyone agree?
I don't think there's any question.
As if there was any reason to debate that.
I mean, even though I give the Boss Man match a dud, that was just because it was a waste. Should have been a dud, and we actually probably gave it too much credit.
All right, the Hogan Award for MVP, who, by the way, I think we should do an honorary name change on this one, Scott. It's been the Hogan Award for a while. He hasn't really won it much. I think we should rename this the Andre the Giant Award.
I agree. Okay. Because he's fucking owned it for like a year and a half, pretty much.
Hogan really Hogan split at WrestleFest. But other than that, he hasn't really had it since the main event. We gave it to him and Andre.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. When's the last time he won it solo? 6/14/87 MSG was the last time Hogan won the solo MVP.
Gets so. Harley Race, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're going to go Andre the Giant Award. D'Amato gave Patera that award in May. all right, Andre the Giant Award. I went with Jake tonight. I thought it was kind of his night. He gets the win over Rude. He, you know, takes out Andre, stands tall. I thought he looked like a star. Andre was great, but I thought this was kind of Jake's night.
Those are my thoughts exactly. Okay. I got to hand it to Jake. As much as Andre made me laugh with that closing interview with Jesse,
he almost stole it.
Hand it to the Snake Man, yeah.
He almost stole it at the end.
I think I want to give it to Cheryl for being such a great great trailer smoke show.
Oh, yeah.
No, I give it to Jake as well. I think we're seeing he's being spotlighted more because, as Peter said, and we've said, JR, that he's been kind of sleepwalking through things with the you know, suspensions and injuries. He seems to be like on the upswing right now. So I agree with Jake too.
Been sleepwalking like a drunken Navy sailor. All right, Sandy Beach Award, newly rebranded for the non-MVP, the worst worker of the night, layup for me, and that's big old Dino Bravo.
I'd give it to either of them in that match. They were both pretty fucking horrible, but Bravo is just Bravo's he's just worse. Literally terrible.
I think if you put someone else in there with Patera on this night, it's okay. Bravo's terrible.
No, he's fucking terrible. I agree.
Much as I would like to give it to the agent for that match, let's see, potato. I'm going to give it to Kenny because I think I'm going to have a chance to give it to Bravo later in the future. Kenny, we're not going to see much of him anymore. So
I think maybe only one more.
Mm.
All right. Best moment. I had Jake showing out with Andre in the post-match.
Yeah, I think that's got to be it.
There's another moment in this one, besides maybe Andre's interview. But all right, the Morocco Award, biggest juice head of the night. I went with Bravo again here.
Oh, he's so – it's funny, too, because he's so fucking – he's not even, like, good shape big. He's fucking bloated, and he's disgusting. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You'd think that a guy who was as much into cigarettes as him might be a little slimmer, but, yeah, it's Dino Bravo.
Oh, boy. All right, and the Patera Award for worst hair, you know, it's his award, baby. We got to give it to him until he's gone. That's Kenny Patera.
Yeah, we gave it to him at SummerSlam. He's won it. He's been part of it every show that he's been on.
Of course. There you go. Except the worst hair. All right. My overall grade, I enjoyed this. I thought it was a pretty solid Saturday Night's Main Event. It had a couple good, pretty good matches. Had a big angle progression. Got Hogan. I went with a 6 out of 10.
I'm going to cut this down the middle. I gave it a 5. You know, the matches were okay. They weren't great. They were, you know, down the middle. The promos were fine. Again, it was cool seeing Hogan wrestle beltless. We don't see that too often, particularly a singles match. But again, the in-ring was you know, average. So I'm going to give it an average grade, 5 out of 10. Peter?
Well, there are 5 matches here, and I really enjoyed 4 of them. So you think it would be a very high grade. But that 5th match left me like I would rather watch Vivisection, okay? You know what I'm talking about? So that knocks it down to a 6 out of 10 here. Still good, still watchable, but the fast forward button will be used in the future.
All right. All right, there you go. So that brings an end to tonight's show. Scott will be back in 2 weeks' time with Survivor Series in 1988, and that'll be Thanksgiving week. So I think things worked out pretty well for us as usual somehow. We stumble into this timing. there we are. So that'll be cool. We'll have a brand new Vintage Vault co-host with us that evening. So keep that in suspense. Okay. Be sure to subscribe to all of our feeds, PlayStation.com, PlayStation.podbean.com. Of course, you have the PlayStation Wrestling feed, the PlayStation Pop feed. Over on the PlayStation Wrestling feed over the past week, we continue to roll out Where the Big Boys Play from the Vault. We had a new main event last week, Scott. You want to talk about that?
Yes, we did have an exceptional main event last week. Our man Brandon Howard joined us to talk about, of course, Crown Jewel and the other money things involving WWE in their third quarter conference call. And then Steve Willey was with Nate and I, and we talked about the most recent New Japan Classic match picks. So that was our episode. So check it out. See if we were right on anything fiscal as we look ahead to the fourth quarter.
All right.
Check it out. It's on there.
Of course, a week ago, we had our Halloween Spooktacular, 8th annual. Myself, you, Jennifer Smith, and Tim Capel live watched Ready to Rumble. So did you listen to that one yet, Peter?
I haven't, and I need to actually watch – Ready to Rumble for the first time. There are a lot of movies that I really need to watch, and that is one of them. Mm-hmm. I should probably just listen to the podcast first and then watch the movie, because I think the podcast I probably enjoy way more than the movie itself.
Most likely. So be sure to check that out. That's out there. And Wrestling Warzone, of course, dropped about a week and a half ago. That was Chad and I looking at Survivor Series 95. Lots to be going on at the PlayStation Pop feed as well. Sure, subscribe to that. We had Songs with Friends number 13, a Comics Pop Blast with Russell and Todd. Looked at 3 comics to recommend from DC Universe. Had a new Hard Traveling Fanboys. Of course, every Wednesday or Thursday, we have This Week in the NFL. We had a Halloween special edition of Freak Out Drive-In. Jennifer and was joined by Stacey O'Loughlin to look at Scream. And, of course, plenty of NBA team content as well. So check all that out. And plenty of content itself up at PlayStation.com each and every day. We had our weekly snapshot. This week was Matt Souza, Brian Bayless, looking at the week that was in WWE television. And plenty of other content for you to enjoy. Peter, anything you want to plug?
Yes, greetings from Allentown. This Thursday, both on the Pro Wrestling Only feed and on my own feed, this Thursday I'll be taking a look at WWF Superstars from September 28th, 1991, which I know probably just saying the date doesn't mean anything. It's the one where Ric Flair comes at Roddy Piper in the broadcast booth, and an addled Roddy Piper hits Vince McMahon with a chair.
Yes.
This episode. Yeah.
And Vince does the stretcher job, and it's just amazing. And the one that is out now is Continental Championship Wrestling from April 23rd, 1988, that can be summed up with these six magical words that I go into in painstaking detail. I'd like to talk to Tom. That is Pritchard. It's the only time anybody ever wanted to talk to a Pritchard.
Unless you were on the Kevin Kelly show, and you have to default to him as a guest at the end of the run.
Yes.
All right, there you go. Check that out. Greetings from Allentown. Great show, of course. As always, placemanation.com, Twitter, place number 2 Manation, Facebook.com/placemanation. And, of course, shop with us on Amazon, placemanation.com/Amazon. And check out our free Vince Vault ebooks. All right, that's it. Scott, 2 weeks' time. Sorry, Series 88. Peter, I'll talk to you soon. Everyone else, take care. Never cut that much.
Let me out.